Inside the Cross Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast. I am Terry Foy. He is Kyle Devitt. It is Thursday. You are listening to this on Friday or Saturday or any time between now and probably the next time we do it. Kyle, how's it going?
Pretty good, man. Got a record number of comments on the piece this week. So
it was pretty wild how much, I guess, the idea of goonish behavior overshadowed the weekend. Do you feel like that says more about goonish behavior or the quality of the weekend?
I mean, the weekend games weren't fantastic, but there was, like, that Chesapeake-Hamilton game was so thuggish and goony. It had to be commented on. And, you know, the funny thing is, like, obviously, like, and not maybe not obviously to most people, but obviously Quinn and I aren't, like, talking every day or ever. So I almost, like, emailed him to be like, hey, are you going to write something about this game? Because I'm going to write something about this game. But in the end, I decided not to do that. And he ended up writing that letter to the league. I didn't really want to be piggybacking on it, but at the same time, I wanted to actually focus on the game itself because I feel like that's the catalyst behind the debate. Although I think little things have been mentioned about, you know, language and stuff like that, previously, at least in my columns for sure. The dropping of the bomb of F is not cool. Especially when you got kids watching a lot of stuff and, definitely witnessed that. And I tried to note it, in previous columns, but this one just kind of, you know, I wanted to focus on why maybe Quint wrote what he wrote. And I think he got some heat for it and he got a lot of supporters at the same time. So, I mean, it's good to talk, you know, raise awareness of the issue.
Yeah, it was interesting to me. I mean, to me, you know, I'm a little bit skeptical or cynical insofar as saying, like, you're never going, like, there are certain things that you can talk about in the sport of lacrosse that are always going to generate interest, response, whatever. Basically, if you talk about a lacrosse video game, you're going to get 100 comments on whatever you do. If you talk about hating Quint, you're going to get 100 comments on whatever you do. If you talk about, like, unsportsmanlike play, that's going to get like a lot of feedback. So to me, it was like a little bit of, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the reaction might be a little bit overblown insofar as you're always going to get that kind of reaction. You know what I mean? It's like a total bait and switch. But that being said, I didn't see Casey's slash to Michael Evans until after I had read both your piece and Quinn's piece. And I expected it to be worse.
Really?
Yeah, I expected it to be out of the course of play, which it wasn't, in my opinion. We've seen that type of, it's a rusty gate that attackmen do all the time that they try to land in, worst case scenario, they want it to hit in an attackman's, or a defenseman's back. Best case scenario, they want it to catch the stick and potentially cause a turnover. I expected it to be, the way that I read it, I expected it to be balls at the end of the field, Evans is, like, walking to the midline, and Casey comes out of nowhere and just, like, hammers him in the back, like, with an axe. Or back of the head, rather. And that's not the way it went down. So that's what I'm saying. It was in the normal course of play. I didn't really think that it was, I thought it was a bad foul. I can understand being suspended for it, but it doesn't really affect my view of Casey as a person or a player.
I mean, I actually had a whole paragraph that I took out about like how I felt about Casey Powell as a player, and I just didn't think it was necessary to the message in the end when I turned it into you. And really, like, it was that bad. The ball was on the ground, and he threw it knowing that he wasn't dislodging the ball. He could see the ball, and he turned and backhanded it.
I'm not sure that I accept that as truth.
I mean, I saw what I saw. It's my interpretation of it, I guess, but I don't think it was up for debate, really. I mean,
I think you're a little bit more sensitive to dirty play as being dirty play than I am. I usually probably give the benefit of the doubt a little bit more frequently to people, but I think that's probably because, as a player, granted I was a goalie, there are only so many opportunities to engage in dirty play as a goalie, but as a player, I just rarely, if ever, had thoughts of what can I do to injure my opponent here.
Right.
I'm not accusing you of having those thoughts, but I think that as a result, I'm just not sensitive to the things that are normally considered to be dirty play.
Well, I mean, I've had people try and hurt me in tournaments and stuff. It's like, it's...
Were they actually trying to hurt you, or did you just think that they were trying to hurt
you? I mean,
this
might shock you, Terry. I'm a little mouthy. So, you know, like, I deserve it most of the time, but... And I wouldn't classify myself as the cleanest player in the world. Not that I'm like a huge player anymore, but I still play. And, you know, it's happened to me, but I've never baseball swung at anyone. You know what I mean? I feel like it was a baseball swing. Like we can debate it all we want. And at the end of the day, it's completely unacceptable. And that's really like a couple people were like, well, why didn't you kill Casey Moore for doing that? That was really bad. I felt like I did as much as I could. I didn't really want to let it go without addressing it directly a little bit. But, you know, at the same time, it's going to elicit a reaction. I didn't obviously write the piece not to get a reaction, but, I mean, it needed to be talked about. And regardless of what Quint would have wrote, I would have written what I wrote. He just happened to provide a pretty solid base of stuff that I didn't have to cover. It's just kind of like, read this, then read this. They're almost companion pieces, which is scary because we didn't communicate at all between the two of us writing those. So.
Yeah, and it was definitely interesting. And so far, you know, obviously, had none of those things unfolded, it would have been, I guess it's difficult to predict exactly how people would have reacted to this extensive, impressive, but ultimately futile Hamilton comeback that left them one goal short of the Chesapeake Bayhawks. And the reason to me that's significant is because, you know, we talked last week about Hamilton running into form. They were starting to get their NLL guys back. They were starting to get their field legs. Those guys were starting to get their field legs back. And they were going to be shaped up, you know, for their second half of the season run. Now they lose Casey Paul this week. Then they have the All-Star break. Who knows what this Hamilton team is going to be capable of doing down the second half compared to, you know, where they might have been if they had been able to pull out that W, not lost Casey Paul for next week. What do you think of the way that game unfolded and potentially what the impact's going to be for the rest of the season?
I think it's definitely going to go down as a missed opportunity for the Nationals. Obviously, there were just a ton of penalties. Like, you couldn't even tell who was man up half the time. You know, they had more footage of the ref on the sideline trying to explain stuff than they had the TV commentators talking about it.
Also, we should point out that it dropped them to 2-4. They would have been 3-3. Two games behind Chesapeake and at 5-2, who would have been tied with Boston and Denver for first place. As it were, they're now three games out of the lead, so to speak, or 3.5 games, excuse me, and then two games behind Long Island for the last playoff spot.
Right. And what you got to look at really is they have two ways to go. After this game and after the All-Star break and after this weekend of games, they can either, you know, galvanize and come together like they did in, you know, in 2009 and even last year, or they can completely implode. And I really think that comes down to, you know, mentality of the team. There's a lot of guys in that team that are talkers. You know what I mean? There's guys that like to talk a lot when they play and, you know, flex a little bit. And that's what one of the things I wrote about in the article kind of came from with Walters. Apparently was one of the commentators said he was yelling at Orson because Orson thought he was celebrating too much. It's like, all right, like I understand you're not playing at home. Like you're playing on someone else's turf. They want to kind of let you know who's boss, but there's a lot of talkers and doers on that team. And really like when the doers become talkers, you have a problem. But at the same time, the talkers can deliver. And if it's one or the other, they're just going to be middling. I really don't think that's going to happen. I think one mentality is going to take over the other. And they could easily just go. I really think like Hamilton's a team that could go undefeated the rest of the season. It wouldn't surprise me that much. But it also wouldn't surprise me if they lost the rest of the games. Like it's so up and down with their consistency of play. And you can say like, oh, they got all their guys back. They almost won. It's like, yeah, but they were getting killed in that first half. They didn't look like they even knew how to play lacrosse in the first half. I mean, that was embarrassing. And then, I mean, they put together this huge comeback. Chesapeake doesn't even score in the fourth quarter. I mean, it was kind of like everything that was good and bad about the Nationals in one game.
Yeah, it was like an emblem, almost.
Yeah, it was very emblematic. Yes, I would agree.
Interesting. Was there another game last weekend that carried nearly as much importance?
Record-wise, not really. I mean, you had Long Island and Boston picking up dubs. Denver-Rochester, like, started out, like, second quarter of Denver-Rochester was awesome. Just up and down, guys firing bullets from all over the place. And then the third quarter, Denver just took it over. Brendan Mundorf, best attackman in the game. I don't care what anyone says, you know, like, and the real thing that came out of that is, you know, Mundorf's emergence, and then Crotty got hurt, at the end of the second quarter. And then he came back in the third and tried to play and caught his ankle again. It looked like his knee. And when I was watching it and tweeting about it, it definitely looked like his knee was hurt, but it's not his knee, it's his ankle. And, you know, hopefully he's ready to play this week. Sudo said on the call that it's like a kind of like a game time decision with him, and he's going to test it out. But, you know, he thinks he might be able to go. So hopefully Karate's not seriously injured, and, you know, Rochester can build on that. But if he's injured, man, Rochester's in serious trouble.
Well, even if he's not, I mean, he hasn't been performing up to his usual standard. A lot of people have attributed that to the additional attention that he gets in comparison to, you know, just not having the pressure being taken off of him. He's got 14 points in 5 games. You know, like you said, he's missed time with injuries, he's missed time with other commitments, that sort of thing. It's interesting that you say so definitively that Brendan Mundorf is the best attackman in the game right now. It's almost like, I can't remember what I was listening to yesterday, but somebody said, very definitively, forgive me for my taste, but I think it was Greenberg on Mike in the Morning. We're talking about, and he basically said, there is, and I kind of agree with this, there is almost no debate that Kobe Bryant is the second best shooting guard to ever play the game. And when you consider who could be in the running for third, fourth, fifth, and how much more impressive his individual and team-oriented resume is than a guy like Jerry West, it does seem true that he only trails Michael Jordan. Now, granted, the gap there is significant. On the flip side, you can say something like Brendan Mundorf is the best attackman in the game. And you, I mean, it's funny. You and I have been taking heat over the last couple days about being so Rabel focused and so anti Mundorf, which personally I find
what?
Yeah, I find that I literally thought that I was like close to being called out for how much I enjoy Brendan Mundorf's game and adore him personally. That's a really weird word to use.
Who said that about us?
I know, right? Somebody that obviously isn't paying attention to the podcast.
That doesn't make any sense. I dissed Rabel last week saying he couldn't play defense in the All-Star preview when they announced the rosters. Come on.
That is true. But either way, getting back to the point, I don't know, I guess like, I don't disagree with your comment. And I've said for a long time that I thought he was the best dodging attackman in the world. I don't think that hasn't been true. He probably took that mantle, I want to say probably, I got to think back, I want to say he probably took it from Ryan Powell right around that 2007-08 area. Now, you would probably have been pretty aggressive to give it to him at that point, but, you know, in retrospect, it makes a little bit more, it's a little easier pill to swallow. I guess when you look at the scoring charts, he's a second in the league right now, probably going to stay that there or one or two spots behind for the rest of the season. So consistent, unbelievably consistent. And his best threat for best attackman in the game, Ned Crotty, isn't performing. You know, he's having a year similar to what Seabold had, last year. I don't have a point. Ben, just kind of talking.
No, I mean, I think that, it's interesting you have that comparison, but I think what you also have to realize is that Lavelle is not producing in Rochester. And he's had some injury problems, but he has not done what we all thought he would do. And that year off has really affected him. He's been pretty, if I may say, and this will probably get me in trouble, he's been a little petulant on the field. He had two penalties in this game. One of them's an offsides. I mean, and it was him falling over the line, not even really like finishing a check. It's like, it's a dumb mistake. Like, you don't expect him to do that. I mean, obviously he's still scoring a couple goals, but he's got to be linking up with Crotty, and they don't even bother to link up. Like, Lavelle is not a Dodger. Lavelle is not a guy to carry the ball from the top of the box to X or to the wing and go. He's the guy that feeds off of other people's dodges and finishes and cleans up the dirty work. And that's the problem with Rochester. Sometimes the dirty work guys show up and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they just leave the lunch pail at home, and that's when they lose. And, you know, in a game like this, like comparing it to Mundorf, I mean, every one of Mundorf's six goals were amazing. Man, they were he hit a shot at the top of the point on the left side that was vicious. It was a vicious shot. Like, I the only person that kind of shoots like that I can recall, that just finishes with such aplomb is Kyle Dixon. And like just merciless, like ripping of shots. And you know, obviously Rabel does it too, but Rabel does it in a weird way where like sometimes the ball bounces and you can't really tell where it went in the goal. There's no doubt ever where the ball goes when Dixon shoots and when Mundorf shoots. And I think that's what really sets him apart, because he's kind of got that midfield cannon, but he's playing attack and he can get to the cage whenever he wants.
Going back to that Kevin Lavelle point for a second. Let's see here. Justin Pennington, Al Mayone, Tommy Palasek, Steve DiNapoli. All guys who have more points than Kevin Lavelle does right now.
Yeah. I mean, would you have, I would have never said that coming in. I just didn't think it was a possibility.
It's pretty shocking.
It is. And he needs to step up, and he knows that, I'm sure. And it's definitely showing that he's frustrated in the way that he plays. But especially without Crotty. And the thing that stinks when you're that kind of a player is you're not the initiator. You're the second, you know, you're the second phase. You're the beta of every play. You know, you're the next step. When you can't be the initiator, it's frustrating to play with, guys that don't necessarily know where you like to go. And, that's part of being on a new team and taking a year off. So hopefully he'll get on track, but I don't know.
Long Island 16, Ohio Machine 12. A game that Joe Spolina said on the conference call he thought could have been a trap game, and he was pleased that they were able to pull out a W. On the flip side, kind of sounded like a couple people that I've talked to with the Machine felt like maybe they let one get away. This was an opportunity for a win. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I mean, Long Island had 2 5-goal runs. If you stop, and, you know, one was in the second quarter at the beginning of the quarter, and one was at the end of the third quarter. And if you stop or get a goal in between that, interrupt that rhythm, you know, you have a chance to win the game. And I really feel like, you know, Ohio definitely missed an opportunity. But again, like, Ohio still so reliant on the transition, so reliant on unassisted goals, so reliant on one-on-one goals, so reliant on, you know, execution of someone else to get someone else the ball. You know, it's very, and if that doesn't happen, that person just goes. So like, it's clear that they now, that wasn't so clear early in the season, especially, that they have an offense that they run. They have plays that they run. It's no longer, hey, let's give Chaz the ball off of a restart and get out of the way. You know, they definitely move the ball a little better. They've definitely, it looks like they've made adjustments. I'll give them that much credit for sure. But when they get pressed in a game and they have to make clutch shots, they don't do it. And that's why they lose. You know, that's why they lose. They don't get outshot by a lot of shots. I mean, in this game, it was, you know, they had what, 32 shots. Actually, no, they outshot the Lizards. The Lizards had 32 shots and they had, you know, 44. That's nuts. And they still lost. You know, you have to get more shots on cage, more shots, more good shots, more good opportunities, and take your chances. It's just not happening for him right now.
What's your review of Steele Stanwyck?
I mean, he's good. He didn't touch the ball. He's like a guy. He needs his touches. You know, he needs the touch. And if you don't give him the ball, he's not going to get a touch. Like, you have to go. He's not going to run all the way to the midfield line to get the ball. Like, you got to get somebody to bring it down. And you would think with all the horses that the Machine have, they have at least a couple guys that can, you know, run down and give him the ball, but it didn't happen in that game for them. So
how much did he look like his Virginia self on the field to you?
I don't think he was hesitant, really. I think he looked, you know, fairly similar. Like I said earlier in a couple other podcasts, like, I've seen UVA play a decent amount. I've seen Steele play a decent amount because of the ACC stuff up here. But, you know, I don't think he looked markedly different. But, you know, at UVA, everything ran through him. And, in Ohio, they're not doing that. And for whatever reason, and you know, you can't really run an offense through one person with a 60 second shot clock. It's not really going to work that well.
Well, you also can't run an offense through a guy who has literally been there for
exactly.
He had not been, like, his first opportunity to play lacrosse with his teammates was the pregame shoot around.
Right. 100%. And I agree with that point as well. So, you know, looking up for the future, we'll see what happens. He got bundled a couple times. And he almost, like, I swear he had a smile. Like, it was hard to tell with the camera, but he got hit, I think, like, his second touch and just kind of dropped to the ground. And, like, I was like, oh, that's what it's like playing lacrosse and getting hit and, like, kind of smiling. So I think that's a good sign, and he's definitely going to do a lot of good things for them in the future.
All right, let's talk about week 7/8. What do you feel about the way that I do this, by the way? Because should I know what week it is more than I do?
I think people care more about the games than what week it is, man.
Okay.
I don't think that matters as much.
So tell me about what we're looking forward to, with, you know, this coming week.
Boston Chesapeake, man. It's a bar burner. Looking forward to that. That's going to be awesome. That's basically like whoever wins that gets first place, right?
It's going to bring Navy Marine Corps Stadium all the way down to the ground. I mean, it seems early to say that because, you know, what if both these teams end up 10-4? They're going to play at least once more to settle the tiebreaker, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it actually isn't the tiebreaker goal differential or after head-to-head.
That seems like something that you would know. Oh, after head-to-head, probably.
After head-to-head, yeah. I think it's goal differential. So, you know, it's an important game either way. I mean, you know, Chesapeake has to win to stay on top, and Boston, you know, has to win to prove that last week wasn't, you know, kind of a fluke against a not so good Charlotte team. You know, it's going to be a great game. I mean, and let's not overlook Denver, Long Island, always an excellent showcase for the league. Those teams hate each other. It's pretty awesome to watch them play. And we're definitely going to see, like, you know, the two tough defenses, and really, like, there could be some fireworks there. And, hopefully, I mean, I think we both know what happened with, like, the thing that Quint wrote that actually went out to all the players in the league from, like, the league office. I don't know if I'm supposed to know that, but I do. So I think that there's definitely going to be a lockdown on hits after the play and stuff like that, across the league this weekend. Kind of an overreaction probably, but, I definitely see it happening. And, that's going to be a game. It's going to be affected by that for sure.
Interesting. And then, yeah, I mean, just, you know, bottom of the league trying to decide itself. Do you feel like the top four teams, how solid are the top four teams, the playoff teams, so to speak? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think that the solidarity of the teams comes from, the building of the philosophy of the team. So, like, Boston is a team that kind of is tough to stop. You try and run with them because they'll just run all over you with their poles. And they'll kill you with shooters. They'll kill you with shots. Basically they live for the reset. It's a team that plays for the reset, on the shot clock. You know, Chesapeake is a team that will beat you in the 6-on-6. You know, that's their strength is they have so many guys that can take advantage of bad slides, and finish the ball. And they don't really rely on one player, but if they had to rely on one player, they have several guys that can step up. They have hard charging midfielders that can come from the top down and shoot and score whenever they feel like it. And they're great in transition as well. You've got Hamilton, who has more stars in 6-on-6 than anyone else in the league, offensively, but, you know, defensively in the 6-on-6, they're suspect. They start, you know, Chad Wiedmeyer and Matt Lovejoy, two rookies back there. So even though, you know, Matt Lovejoy, as I so eloquently put it on the conference call, took, John Gray Jr.'s cookies, in the game this past weekend, you know, it's still someone that teams will go at, cause they're rookies. You know, you can't rely on that. Denver is freakish. Denver's very freakish in that they do rely on like three guys. They rely on Mundorf. They rely on Poyon, even though Poyon's just kind of coming back, and they rely on Sieverts a lot more than people think. If you watch the game, and you watch the tape, that ball movement is very key to him getting open and him getting to his spot at the top of the two-point arc. But they also have a strong defense. They're great in the 6-on-6. Jesse Schwartzman's an animal in net. They clear the ball very well. Their riding is pretty bad. I will say, if like they have a weakness, it's their riding, you know. And I think, you know, obviously the other team's Long Island. Long Island is really tough when they play their game. When the calls go their way and they can, you know, do the little things that they do with their D-mids, like Understein and Ward hasn't played in a while, but Ward is really good at this as well. Just kind of like inhibiting other guys with a shorty that's almost as effective in shutting guys off and bumping them off the ball as a long pole is. So what they can do defensively is kind of make you take bad shots that you think are open, but your shot's going to get adjusted by a guy coming. They backtrack really well. The guy coming with a backcheck. Offensively, obviously, you know, Langtree and Gibson are like crazy chemistry. You know, they've done so many good things. And then you have Catalino to account for, who randomly comes out of nowhere from the wing and just rips shots. And then, of course, you have Max Seabold, who is kind of returning to form. So I think those are five of the best teams, I think. I don't really think we need to talk about Rochester, Ohio, or Charlotte being in the playoff picture until they win some games. But, you know, those are teams.
And that was ultimately my question, what I was getting at, and particularly with respect to now that, you know, we're getting to this All-Star break and whatever else, how many teams do we need to pay attention to? Is the playoff field essentially set? Was my question.
I think Hamilton,
you think you still need to keep an eye on Hamilton?
Yes. Yes. 100%. Because it's too much talent. Whereas Rochester, you can see where the talent spread and, they're a hustle team. You know what I mean? Like they're going to hustle to get their points, but they have to hustle to get their points. You know, these other teams can just happen upon goals. You know, they just know how to score goals. They have so much more experience, really, than like the young teams like Rochester. And Long Island's very young too, so you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, unless they keep their rhythm, they could get upset a couple times by some of the expansion teams. And just like you said, the Ohio game very well could have been a trap game, and they very well could have lost that game if they didn't go on those 2-5 goal runs. So you know, we'll see what happens going forward, but you know, Long Island always has the ace in the hole of Drew Adams, who is, in my opinion, the best goalie in the league right now. As far every aspect, he's just amazing. He's just the second coming of Greg Cotrano. Awesome to watch.
Wow, high praise. Greg Cotrano, in that he wears a Lizards uniform or other things as well.
That he stops the ball, and every time he doesn't stop the ball, it looks like he was like screened. Like he'll make stops he's not supposed to make, really. That's what I thought, you know. And obviously Cotrano was known for coming out of the cage, and now Queener does that and all that stuff. But I think the thing about Cotrano that I remember the most is when he made a save, he always looked like he meant to, even if he didn't, which is pretty awesome. And definitely a sign of a great goalie who plays exceptional angles and is acrobatic in their ability to meet the ball. So.
Well, I wish there were a better segue to welcome in Jack Reed, but there isn't. So let's just go ahead and do that, and then we'll come back.
And we talk about goalies a little bit. Let's bring him in.
And the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast continues with Jack Reed, Boston Cannons defenseman, the Ginger Gorilla, as Kyle Devitt recently dubbed him. And Jack, first of all, we really thank you. I think everybody out there knows that you're a tough guy. I don't know if they realize that you are tough to the degree that you're willing to do an audio interview like within 24 hours of having oral surgery. So thanks a lot for joining us, man.
My pleasure, guys. A minor inconvenience, but I'm happy to be here.
Well, so I guess just to dive right in, can you give us a little bit of bring us up to speed on this Boston Cannons season? Obviously, hot start, couple losses that you probably weren't too satisfied or pleased with, and then a rebound, I guess, or how would you characterize the way the last couple weeks have unfolded?
Well, you know, we did get off to a great start. It's a nice observation on your part. 4-0 is definitely the way we wanted to get things rolling, and dropping games isn't what we're looking for. We do want to get better each week. It's a focus of ours this year. It was a focus of ours last year. And it was nice to get back on track, and I think we're rounding out. It's a long season. There's a lot of lacrosse. There's a lot of factors that come into play. And you know, while the goal is to try and go out there and win every game that you can, the reality is it's not always possible. But I think we're all pretty happy with where we're at. We know the level of lacrosse that we can play, and we're excited to keep competing against some of the better teams in the league coming up.
Hey, Jack, what's up? It's Kyle. you know, I guess the obvious question is, you know, what was your response to Quinn's article about, you know, kind of dirty play and language and stuff on the field, in the league in general, with you kind of being known as a rough and tumble player, let's say. I'm just curious to get your take on that.
Well, certainly an important topic to be addressing. We see it across all of the major sports, and protecting athletes and being positive role models for our fans are definitely both topics we want to take a lot of pride in. I can certainly speak for myself as a tough guy. You know, it's tough sometimes to play that fine line between you know, being physical and having a presence as a defenseman, and also keeping things within the rules of the game. But the speed of the lacrosse is one of the great attractions of the sport, and also makes that line really tough to toe. But I think we got you know, some individuals that little out of touch with, you know, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. I know I've learned in my years, you know, that I don't want to put my team in bad situations and don't want to hurt during the course of play. So, you know, bad penalties are bad penalties. And there's a time to set a tone. There's a time to defend your teammates. So all these things come into factor. And, you know, the MLL is the highest level of competition the game has, without question. It's fastest. The cross checks are the hardest, and we swing our sticks hard too on defense. So I don't want to see the level of physicality diminish, but I think some guys have taken it a little bit too far too.
So it would be fair to say, or fair to characterize your opinion as saying that, you know, it's one of those things that you always have to see constant improvement on and always be evaluating.
Certainly. I think, you know, the game and the awareness changes the longer we all play it. But there are moments and within the pace of the game that, you know, it's a split-second decision. And sometimes you get while it might not be a great-looking play or a pretty bad penalty, you know, it's at the top. Guys are out there trying to play hard and play within the rules. But there are some times out there you can see it. Guys are a bit. Some of them, frankly, I think a little bit is playing into their reputation, and the media, frankly, and the front office have done a lot to bolster the image of these guys, but at the same time, I think there's been a lost touch with reality as well. So you've got to have a constant mindset of playing hard and being physical, but you want to keep it clean. We got to be respectful of the game. I know I've had maybe one penalty in my entire career that I truly regret. But outside of that, I do most all of them over again. But there's a difference between being tough and being fake tough and show tough. And some of these seem to me more like WWE wrestlers than they are true lacrosse players, as they have for a couple of years. And I don't think there's any place for that either.
Well, all right. Well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to follow up with you on is the idea that, you know, the All-Star Game has reverted to the old school young gun format. It's funny for me to think about you as a veteran in this league, because your UMass team that I followed in 2006, make a miraculous run, was, you know, it was one of the I guess kind of formational kind of years of my lacrosse watching experience. I was in college at the same time, and you know, I remember that very fondly in terms of getting in, becoming a fan of college lacrosse in a more real way. And so now, you mentioned earlier about you know, learning about the game, learning about how to play the game. I was interested in your take. You know, when you look at this Boston Cannons team, you know, it now has a strong veteran presence all the way across the board, you know, with Mitch Belisle having, probably 5 years under his belt now, and then Kyle Sweeney being, you know, among the foremost players in the game for such a long time. How do you feel about kind of the nature of being a veteran in the league versus, you know, maybe where you were at earlier in your career?
It's been a wonderful experience, and it's looking back on now, it seemed to be quite the trip, 6 years in the league. a lot of fun, a lot of memories, and a lot of experience. And I think that's really what's come to play with our defense and a lot of our team within the Cannons. And guys recognizing their roles and how the game fits into the greater piece of life, I think really come into play when you start talking about veterans that manage the ability to play week in and week out, years on end now, and also play at a high level, push the envelope, and do things in the right way. But I think you see the leadership that each of us possesses really enables us to fit as pieces into the larger puzzle. And I think that's one of the abilities that experience has helped really drive and develop within myself personally, and I think I see it within other teammates that I played with for a long time.
Jack, one of the things the Cannons do, in my opinion, better than anyone else, is kind of spread to the wings on a save for the clear, and then just move the ball with the poles all the way up the field. You're usually good for one. What is he doing? I can't believe he just scored that goal a year. When are we going to see that from you this year?
The opportunities happen when they happen, although I'm always looking for them. So one of the first on poles to ever pull the air gate in the MLL. I'm not quite sure. You'd have to check the archives, but I do like to have fun. If I'm going to run all the way down there, I want to make it count. But I give a lot of respect to Sweet and Ricci and Farrell. They go up and down all day, and it's really a strength of our defense, really all of our long sticks in transition, how to handle the ball, know how to run and be a part of the offense. And I actually bailed a little bit early last week and left Rabel hanging, and he gave me an earful. But it was deserved. Gone down, I'd actually gotten the ball behind X and shifted field to play a little bit. And when I was making my exit, I kind of timed it bad, and I could have posted up and given him a little help and stayed involved in the offense. But it's fully supported, and we all have a lot of trust in each other's abilities to hit the ball and make decisions with it. So it's a lot of fun to watch those guys play and to take that ball from the defensive end and just zoom on. It's going to the O, and, might even be a long pull. Farrell pulling up for a two-pointer next, wouldn't even shock me.
Jack, you guys got a premier matchup in the league this weekend, taking on the Chesapeake Bayhawks. I guess you talked about it being a long season. This is right around the midpoint. So what is a big highlight reel matchup like in the middle of the season? What are the important things that you're going to try to take away from hopefully a W, but either way, a game where you're competing against another premier team in the league?
There are some marquee matchups that teams are able to circle as the year goes on, and certainly going up to Denver is always one of mine. And Chesapeake's no different. They got a loaded roster, and it's a stiff competition. So any chance that we have to really focus on our game going into a tough competition like this and a tough matchup, and it's really like when we revert to focusing on what we do well, staying within our game and playing ranks. And really the goal of the season is to do that with consistency and to be on a roll going into the end of August. So this is a great opportunity for us to, test the metal a little bit and get out there and display that we're ready to handle a high-level competition.
Jack, just kind of bringing it in, Terry, I think, has one more question. But, I mean, you've played with, two pretty spectacular goalies in Kip Turner and Jordan Burke. What's the biggest difference between both of them? Obviously Kip went to the bench last year when you guys won the championship, but the year before he was goalie of the year. Now he's on the Bayhawks. What's the biggest thing that differentiates those two? Because they really play not a similar style, but they have the ability to just take over a game. What's your kind of like feeling on the difference between those two guys?
Well, I've been with a lot of really good goalies, and Jordan Burke is one of the calmest demeanored goalies I've ever played with, and I think that really plays into his strength. He has an ability to sit there and take it, and I see it in practice all the time. I don't know how he stands in there when Rabel's pulling up and just unleashing rockets during shoot-arounds, but, he has this just ice-cold mentality in there, and I think that really roots him well in the cage and allows him the ability to withstand the heat, and also once he starts getting on a roll and making some saves, to really take things over. Kip himself, I love Kipper. He's a great goalie. I had a lot of fun playing in front of him. He's a fun person to be in front of, and I think he has a lot of fun when he's out there and he's playing. He's just having a really good time, and he's a bit of a goofball. And I think all of these things add up to help him when using between the pipes, sit down and have fun with it. And it's MLL. You're going to have guys ping the corners, and there are shots that you just cannot save or stop. But he's ready. He lashed it off, and he's ready to grab the next one. And I think that really helps him and his mentality while he's playing.
And that, yeah, just to kind of wrap things up, Jack, you know, one of the things that's going to be the storyline for this Canon season as you guys move toward the playoffs is this idea of repeating. You know, every sport has its own unique challenges. I realize that you've never been in this situation, so, you know, it's not as if you can really speak to it, but what has been the experience of carrying the mantle of trying to repeat been like so far, and what do you maybe expect it to be like down the road?
Well, you have a bat on your back. Everybody wants a piece of last year's top dog, so you got to shoulder that responsibility and somehow maintain your focus on yourselves, the unit, the team itself. So the more we can drill down on playing our game and playing within ourselves, the more success we'll have this year. We obviously want to repeat it. That's the goal. That's why we're all back this summer, and that's why a lot of us are excited for the challenge. And, you know, we're going to go out there, put our best foot forward, and try and get a little bit better each game during the season and hopefully be in a good position to roll into the end of August.
Jack Reed, Boston Cannons defenseman, thank you very much for playing through pain, joining us on the podcast, and good luck not only this weekend but for the rest of the season. Hopefully we'll be able to have you on again later on when, you know, maybe championship time's heating up.
Look forward to it, guys. Thanks a lot for the time today.
Thanks, Jack.
Kyle, that was Jack Reed. Do you think he had a problem with me calling him the Ginger Gorilla on the podcast?
Well, technically the quote was Ginger Hulk. I think he probably likes that a little bit more. But
he has a gorilla tattooed on his leg.
Yeah, his Twitter handle is Magilla Gorilla. So he probably wasn't as offended to that as me calling him a mythical red beast. But we'll see. I think he's cool. I mean, he's all jacked up from the mouth surgery. He'll be fine.
He's not even gonna remember it.
I mean, hope he remembers it. It was a great interview, especially by you, I gotta say. Well played.
Thanks, sir. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said it.
Yeah, there you go. So, we kind of talked about next week already. Not a whole lot else to get to here on the MLL podcast. So why don't we just give you an opportunity to be a hype man for this weekend as the, you know, top four teams all play each other. One last opportunity.
All right. You have to watch Denver and Long Island. You have to watch Boston and Chesapeake, because if you don't, you won't know what's going on with the league. Those two teams are high octane. Run up Boston, Chesapeake especially, run up and down the field, going to put on a great show. Hopefully the refs control the game. I know they will. Denver, Long Island, you know, wants to prove that it's not a fluke still. You know, they need that quality win. They got it against Boston, but can they beat another top team like Denver? Denver, a lot to prove, you know, on the road. They need a dub to stay in the top, but Denver's one of the most well-organized teams out there, and they're going to put on a show. I can't wait to watch. And I think this weekend, not to pop away from the games, but I believe on Sunday I will be co-hosting Lacrosse Talk with Danny Matthews, doing a mid-season MLL roundup. So tune in for that. I don't really know if I can get the URL out, but, you know, Lacrosse Talk, you can find it. It'll be a good time. We're talking to every coach. And, yeah.
You'll sweet it.
Yeah, I'll tweet it.
And I'm actually going to be on Inside the MLL this weekend.
Are you?
Yeah, hopped up to the studios on Monday, recorded my bit. Yeah.
How'd it go?
I think it went all right. I don't know. I'll find out when I see the actual videos.
Yeah, so far the predictions I made in my week two appearance have all held true, by the way.
Good for you. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I don't watch it every day at all. I don't have a DVR. I'm not a narcissist. It's all good.
All right, Kyle Devitt, that's going to do it for the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to the listeners, and we'll see you next week.
All-Star, baby. It's coming up. Let's do it.
Inside Lacrosse podcast.